Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon, and once again having a wonderful time. Bill Russell is with me. He wants to ask
about,
a question of Frost
question.
Of
Wall. I was just looking. The business press is full of lots of different kinds of things. I came across something this week where some academics had just published an article that said revenge in the workplace is okay. that it serves a very useful function, that it helps work through the system. And I read that, having just read through your book, and I say, this sounds very familiar.
Yeah, well, since I'm doing a lot of research on reciprocity, which we usually translate in positive reciprocity, you do me a favor, I do you a favor.
But the other side of that,
I got interested in getting even with someone, and actually chimps are very good at that. And chimp, I've known one chimp male, for example, an alpha male of a group. It was not here. It was in Holland when I studied earlier. Who was very systematic about that. Let's say five chimps chase him, which would happen quite frequently. He was not a very popular alpha male, so they would all go after him. Then 2 hours later, everyone had completely forgotten this incident. He would walk up to each one of them and get even with them, beat them up. Yeah. And he did that to females and males, and he would do all of them. Because I remember one day he had like eight going after him. I said, well, I'm going to keep a record of this, see what he's doing now. He got all eight of them.
Systematically went through the entire...
And this really greatly discouraged these individuals to do this sort of stuff.
And
for him it served a purpose.
Well, and it's, you know, I guess I'm like everybody else. You know, you talk about animal behavior, and I'm accustomed to the stereotypes, as in, you know, all chimpanzees do this, all ducks do this, and what struck me about your research is the extreme individualism.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the different ways, the alpha male is not just the alpha male.
He may
do it through coalitions, he may do it through selective retribution, may do it through rewards. Which
that
is,
sounds a lot like people.
Yeah, yeah. Rewards is an interesting one, because there was an alpha male in the wild, this was in Mahala Mountains in Tanzania, who bribed.
Bribed?
So he would do the food sharing. So even if, let's say, you had captured a monkey, and normally you are the one who distributes the food, then that's how chimps do that normally, he would get it from you and he would do the distribution. He would often not eat himself, so really the distribution of food was more important to him. It seems almost like eating from the prey. And he would do the distribution, he would selectively distribute the food to those parties who could support him in fights and would support him in fights, and not to his rivals. And Nishida, who is the Japanese scientist who kept track of that whole thing for 10 years, said that his long tenure as an alpha male was to a large degree by his very effective methods of bribery.
Are you willing to make the great leap from the chimpanzees to humans and say that this is the same behavior? That this is primate behavior? That this isn't us versus them?
Well, yeah, these are sort of political tendencies, so to speak. If you want to be alpha male in a chimp group, you have to do more than just beat up individuals. You have to also make friends who are willing to support you. And, well, if that's human behavior, which it is, I'm sure, it's very similar. Yeah.
Well, I kept finding as I was reading and looking at the pictures in your book about the bonobos, much of what you describe sounds like what I see in corporations. What you are describing as very specific behavior among other primates sounds like walking down the hall watching people at the water cooler.
Yeah.
Do you see it that way?
Yeah, well, if I would have a tower like this overlooking some corporate headquarters.
Well, I sometimes do.
You know, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. I prefer to look at chimps. Also because you don't have the language. The language is complicated.
Well, and that's
good or bad.
You have to turn off the sound. And then you see these things better.
You mean the words?
What people say to each other and what they do is often so different. So I can say, hi, how are you doing? But at the same time, I am in a very nasty mood towards you.
am I going to know it?
And my language distracts from that. And that's how we often use language also, not only as an information system, but also a distraction
as
system.
As a decoy almost.
I'm sitting here thinking through, and it sounds like, you know, we've got this continuity of behaviors, and I'm almost inclined to come back at it the other way and say, what are the differences?
Mm-hmm.
And to this point, what I'm hearing you say, the principal difference is in language.
Yeah, language is a principal difference.
Are there others that
organization of thoughts? I don't think we have really the data on that, on to what degree that is different. But clearly we are an intelligent species compared to almost any other.
I really was quite captivated at a particular line in Good Natured, your most recent book, that was talking about how the speed at which things are changing is stretching us, that we are very adaptive as a system, as a species, but with the premise that where we are today isn't necessarily where our species will end up, unless, of course, we do something stupid as a species. Do we have room to grow in all of this? Well, and can we do it fast enough?
I think the biggest challenge for our species is that we probably used to live for millions of years in small groups, usually called a hunter-gatherer society, like and they, say, 150, 200 people maximum, maybe.
And they all knew each other?
They all knew each other. They grew up with each other. They married with each other. They always saw each other every day, and so on. And now we live in these huge urban areas where you're lucky if you run into someone that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really the big challenge for our species. We're remarkably good at it. I don't think you can, if you take a city like New York, 10 million people, I don't think you can put 10 million chimps in a city like that and have a peaceful, I'm not saying that New York
is peaceful,
but
yeah,
it's relatively
peaceful under the circumstances.
I don't think chimps could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a psychology that enables us, for some reason, to handle this situation, but it's really stretching it, I think, because we didn't evolve in that kind of societies. They're very recent.
The subject of community comes up over and over and over again, and it seems to be vital to people's well-being, and it seems to be something we need to do to survive as a species. Are we able to learn from other primates about what works and what doesn't work? Are there things that we can take into this challenging, fast period of change in which we live that have to do with community that we can learn from these guys?
Well, we can learn from watching primates that there are a lot of tendencies that we have that are not necessarily, they're sometimes presented as things that we invent or things that we install in children through education, but many of these tendencies are fairly widespread among the primates.
Like what?
And so the message of primatologists is really that a lot of the things that we do and the tendencies that we have are quite a bit older than some social scientists want us to believe.
What kind of tendencies are you talking about?
Well, the sort of things that I study, like reciprocity, reconciliation, getting even with someone, tendencies to enforce social rules, all these things. These are not things that we sat down and invented on our own. You know. and that's sometimes the impression you get from the social sciences, that we can be anything we want to be, which is really sort of 60s hippies type of thinking. Like
you don't buy that, huh?
Sexual jealousy is wrong, and so we'll get
rid
of
over
it.
That. We'll never do that again.
Yeah.
Let me posit as a response to what Paul is saying. It also sounds as if one of the limitations that we should learn is the limits of reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, sort of coming at it the back way, if, you know, in watching animals whose rational capabilities are probably not as advanced, at the same time, we have applied our rational faculties to justifying and rationalizing behaviors that are more or less identical to that, and it seem to me that, you know, part of the lesson in that is that the limits of reason, that we reason will not necessarily, is not sufficient in and of itself to get us the places we want to be. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think.
Does that reflect your experience?
I think if we were purely rational, would we even care about poor people, for example? Let's say, I really classify that basically under sympathy. You know, the fact that we are willing to protect and to some degree, maybe not 100%, but to some degree help people who are in need, to reassure people who are in trouble. Those are not rational decisions.
Nor is smoking.
On the basis,
nor is smoking.
Yeah.
Well, follow that line of thought about taking care of people who cannot necessarily take care of themselves. I have a dear friend who sees things quite differently than I do about the role of the larger community in taking care of people who are less able to take care of themselves. And
you mean
I say,
this is the larger is the government, I suppose? Or?
Well,
yes.
In any of its manifestations, yes, specifically government, or in non-official formations. But in this case, the discussion is invariably around government. And I maintain that we have obligations to others in our species, and if the government is the way to meet them, so be it. we see this differently, she and I. Uh-huh. But we argue about it a lot, and we do it as good friends, and I uh-huh. guess we get stuck in the reasoning part. But as I read your work with the primates, there was a sense that the whole, the good of the whole, does in fact serve the good of the individual. I guess that's where I'm headed. Did I get that right?
Yeah, well, as a biologist, I'm very careful about the good of the whole, because we usually assume that things evolve because they benefit an individual or the close kin of an individual, and I think that's still the safest assumption. But individuals have an interest in a society that is structured in a particular way. If your survival depends on groups, as in many social animals, then how the group functions is extremely important. And so individuals start to care about what kind of society they live in. Is it a good society for them, for their kin, for others? And that's, I call it community concern. So it's not so much a concern in the abstract about who cares about a community, but it's more about my social environment and how I'm going to do in this social environment versus another kind of environment.
Well, and at that point, you're speaking as a biologist, yes?
Yeah.
But in a way, what I'm hearing you say is this, you know, what it makes is the life I live, the community in which I live, a more pleasant place as opposed to a less pleasant place.
Well, you create your own environment. And so I would compare it to, let's say, a beaver who builds a dam. The beaver needs to maintain the dam, otherwise the whole thing is going to fall apart. And so a beaver has an interest in maintaining that structure to the best possible degree. Now, if your survival depends not on a dam but on a social group, then you repair things in that social group, or you prevent things from happening in that group that are not in your interest.
Well, and in a way, this is the story of the commons. I mean, they're, you know, they're...
You mean like the park in the middle of the village commons?
Yeah, or... We did a program about the seas. The seas are being mm-hmm. exploited. They're our last great commons. The seas are being exploited beyond their ability to sustain it. However, for each individual, and in fact for each mm-hmm. political entity around those seas, it is in their economically short-term best interest. Or at least.
So an illustration of that would be, for example, chimps. It happens sometimes that females bring males together who are unable to reconcile. So you have two males, they have a major brawl, they have a fight. They sit down for half an hour, they don't look at each other, they don't reconcile with each other. And then sometimes a female goes to one of those males and nudges him a little bit or pulls at his arm and gets him going to go to the other male. So she brings them together. We call that mediations. And these mediations are very interesting because it indicates that that female has apparently decided that it's in her interest to fix this problem between the males. Well, I'm not saying that this is not some self-serving behavior. Probably it is serving her own interest, but at the same time it served the interest of the males, probably the interest of the whole community. And so she's repairing something, like the beaver who repairs his dam.
Well, and I'm hearing you say this isn't either or, this is again a continuum that mm-hmm. you don't have to pick of whether it's going to be to the good of the individual or the
good
of the group.
But there may be also females who want to promote a fight between yeah. two males, and so
no.
she may be doing the opposite. That happens also.
But overall, the community can't survive unless the preponderance is on the integrative, the stabilizing. I mean, ultimately, they would come unstuck without mm-hmm. waiting in that direction. And isn't that essentially what you're coming up with?
You mean socialist model of evolution?
That's
I didn't
not
mean
exactly
that.
What I
exactly what I meant. But let's pursue that.
But no, it's sort of interesting because the social Darwinists, as they used to be called, had a very, you could say, conservative view, you know, in a sense. We need to wrap up.
We'll be back in just a minute with Franz de Waal and his friends, the chimpanzees. We are on an observation tower at the Yerkes Primate Center. Bill Russell and I were with Franz de Waal. We hope that you'll stay with us, and we're going to be right back.